The announced title of my talk today is, or the theme for our sitting today is, traps and snares can never reach it. And by it, we mean zazen, the sitting meditation. And this line, traps and snares can never reach this zazen, comes from a text that we'll chant later at noon service. This text is called the Fukan Zengi in Japanese. And it was written by Ehe Dogen, who was, many of you know, a Japanese monk who decided to go to Japan, to China. He lived in Japan, and he decided to go to China to study. And when he came back, he was full of enthusiasm for the practice of sitting meditation as the core practice of realizing Buddhahood, realizing the Buddha way. And so he actually wrote Fukan Zazengi as a kind of broadside, in a way, to announce his intention to essentially bring this this teaching and this centrality for sitting meditation as the core of Buddha Dharma back to Japan. So he wrote this Fukan Zengi, and the lines the passage from which this comes starts the zazen that I speak of, this zazen that I'm talking about, it's not learning meditation. It's simply the Dharma gate of joyful ease. Simply the Dharma gate of joyful ease. The practice realization of totally culminated enlightenment. It is the manifestation of ultimate reality. Traps and snares can never reach it. Once its heart is grasped, you are like the tiger when he enters the mountains, or a dragon when she gains the waters. For you must know that just there in zazen, the right Dharma is manifesting itself. And from the first, dullness and distraction are struck aside. So this is a very kind of high ideal for practice, high ideal for what zazen, I guess you'd say, you know, the power of zazen. We were just talking, we were just having some zazen instruction in the first period of this sitting, and you know, it's hard to talk about zazen without conveying the idea that it's something that you can do. You have to talk about this sitting upright. You have to talk about the breath. Well, maybe you don't have to, but you've got to say something. You could just say, come in there and look at what everybody else is doing and just do that. Yeah. Just pretend you know what you're doing. And cross your legs and just sit there and see what happens. And that would actually be, that would be like really pure instruction. But even Dogen resisted that kind of, you know, that kind of pure instruction. He put out a kind of, he was kind of putting out a billboard, you know, for this sitting meditation. But it's so important to convey, but it's difficult to convey the idea or the experience or the realization that Zazen is as much received as it is practiced or done by us. It's something that we put ourselves in a position to receive, and so it's really a practice of being still and listening very carefully to what this stillness and silence is trying to convey to us. It's quietly trying to convey a message of peace. What does he say? It's trying to convey a message of joyful ease. Of joyful ease. The translation used to say, repose and bliss. Zazen I speak of is a practice of repose and bliss. But I think joyful ease is, I mean, bliss is actually one of the stages of meditation as well, but I think joyful ease for us is better. Something maybe that's sorely missing in our culture and perhaps in our own lives. When I sent out the message about it, I also paired it with another quote, and that quote was from lines from the song, another Zen text called the Song of the Jewel Mirror Samadhi, and those lines were outwardly still, but inwardly moving. Like a tethered colt or a trapped rat. The ancient sages pitied them and so bestowed upon them the teachings. So, this is another view, and I think this is a view that even if we can, well, joyful ease is, you know, I don't know about joyful ease, but I know about outwardly still, but inwardly moving. So, you know, you have these two, and you have these two different animal groups in the two phrases, which I like. You know, you got the trapped rat, and the tethered colt in the one, and then you have in Dogen's quote, you have the tiger gaining the mountains and the dragon gaining the water. So, what kind of animal are you? Yes, it even has his name in it. Ehe. Yeah, and don't ask me to translate the rest of it, but Ehe is his first name, Ehe Dogen. So, you know, the second quote said that the ancient sages observed these people trying to do Zazen, and they observed that they were outwardly still, but they were fidgeting. They weren't settled. They were inwardly moving. They weren't. Their bodies and minds were not moving like, you know, in parallel tracks. They weren't moving together. So these ancient sages have mercy. That's what one of the qualities of sages is, that they have mercy and compassion for living beings, and so they bestow teachings. They bestow teachings to try to get us, try to help us be in sync. Try to help us be when we want to be inwardly still and outwardly still. When we want to be like that, they give us some teachings to help us. Help us in that direction, and compassionate teachings. These are teachings of mercy, and one of these teachings is giving. So when we sit in sitting meditation, we're advised to practice giving. And giving, as my teacher has so eloquently pointed out, giving includes welcoming. Right? So if you're like, and think of it like if you're the host, like say you're throwing a party, say you're having some people over, that's an act of giving. And when you go to the door, you welcome the people to come in. So welcoming is part of giving. So this compassionate teaching of welcoming and giving is that whatever comes in our sitting meditation, one of the things that's going to help us be still with it is to welcome it, is to not fight with ourselves about what comes in sitting meditation, but welcome whatever does come. The danger of Dogen announcing that Zazen is the Dharma gate of joyful ease is that you set up an ideal that what's supposed to come to me in Zazen is joyful ease. That's what I paid my $20 for. That's what I signed up for today. Joyful ease. So, if that doesn't come, then and that's what we thought we were supposed to get. Then we have some dissonance there. So then, already we're off on the wrong foot. So we practice welcoming whatever it is that rises in our Zazen. It is what's present. So even if it's immoral, even if it's hateful, even if whatever it is, we should see it as it is. And part of the confrontation, which I will call Zazen a kind of confrontation. Part of the confrontation in Zazen is seeing things about ourselves that we are aghast. We are aghast at the workings of our unconscious, unacknowledged greed, hatred, and delusion. And Zazen is kind of a crucible. It's kind of a crucible. And I actually don't know what crucible means, but it's like a cauldron or something, and all your stuff will come in will come in and be. I remember a quote, like apparently Thoreau said something like, if you sit quietly in the forest, all the animals will come out to greet you. You know, if you just sit quietly in the forest, all the animals will come out to greet you. And Zazen is like that. If you just sit quietly and observe, a lot will come, and some of it will be dark forces. Some of it will be really dark forces. And if you turn away from that, part of your effort in Zazen is just to see what is there. And I know it sounds crazy, but welcome it. Welcome the crazy. Because some of it is really crazy. It feels really crazy and it feels frightening. It's probably worth mentioning that I think most of you know I just came back from a 3-week intensive retreat at Green Gulch Farm. So I am reporting. I am reporting the news. The news is that there is some frightening, disgusting, horrible stuff in here. And it comes to the surface and it's seen and it's hard to work through. It is really pretty hard to work through. And the only thing that's stronger than that stuff is the joyful ease of Zazen. Fully culminated Zazen mind is the only thing that traps and snares can never reach. And again, I am reporting. This is not like I'm making this up or this is some teaching that's remote. I am reporting from the front lines of Zen Hall, Green Gulch Farm. This is how it is over there. And thank God. I'll say thank God. Thank God for Zazen. Thank God that there is something, some compassionate power that traps and snares of greed, hate, and delusion can't reach. We should be grateful, very grateful to have such a practice in light of who we are. In light of our, didn't we say something about karma in there? Karma in the chant? Even though our past evil karma has greatly accumulated, indeed being the cause and condition of obstacles in practicing the way, let me tell you, you don't know the half of it. So when you do that kind of practice, you know the whole of it. And you need these compassionate practices. You wish for these ancient teachers. You're so grateful for these ancient teachers that bestowed on us these compassionate practices, these compassionate ways to be with ourselves. The intention to look undistractedly at what's coming up and to acknowledge it and to let it go and to look undistractedly at what's coming up and to acknowledge it and let it go and keep doing that and keep doing that over and over and over, period of Zazen after period of Zazen. And there doesn't seem to be, you would like to think you could just tunnel through this stuff and get to the other side without climbing up over this huge mountain of greed, hate, and delusion. But it doesn't seem to work that way. It seems like you have to walk up over. Somebody put a... I was staying in the guest house at Green Gulch Park Farm, and somebody put out some nuts for, you know, like their personal nuts for us. You know, and you eat in the Zendo at this retreat, right? So that's all you get is whatever is, you know, you can eat in 5 minutes in Ariyoki style in the Zendo. So sometimes you feel a little hungry afterwards. You know, quite. I lost close to 10 pounds in 3 weeks. So you kind of feel hungry afterwards. We live in the cold too. You know, you don't live in heat, so you're outside a lot and you're cold a lot, and that tends to burn calories. But anyway, somebody put these nuts in the guest house. It says, what did it say? It said they put a note on it. Is, here's some nuts for you, because sometimes you feel like a nut. And I thought, yeah, that's right. I feel like a total nut in there, in that Zendo. I feel like a total nut, like really, a really despicable nut, you know, a real nut. Yeah.
Do you ever see a show called The Simpsons?
I know of it. I don't watch it. Yeah. Yeah. I will endorse that quote. I will endorse that quote. So we have other compassionate practices. I think you've heard of these compassionate practices before. They're called the six paramitas. We have the practice of patience. We, the ancient sages, advise us to be patient with what arises in zazen. So we have, you know, physical pain that comes up, and we have mental pain that comes up, and you know, whereas we're not into self torture in the tradition. To sit with patiently with some discomfort, for instance, like being too cold, your feet. I tend to sit a lot on a bench, and so my feet would be cold all the time. And then they have this lovely practice of between. It's like, okay, we start sitting at 5 a.m. in the morning. And the first kinyan is at 5:40. Well, you know the sun's not up then, right? But they have this lovely practice of opening all the doors in the Zendo to, you know, because it's gotten stuffy. And even though I have to wear now, because of old age, I have to wear compression stockings, or else my feet swell when I sit for a long period of time. So even though I wear some socks and the Zendo, still, when you open all the doors, you have to have patience with the cold, and you have to try to relax with the cold, and you relax with your thoughts about why do they open those doors? What a stupid idea that is, you know. So you have these kinds of thoughts, and you have to be patient. Or the practice of compassion is to be patient with those thoughts. and to let go of those thoughts. And to see those thoughts as distractions and as putting up a barrier to joy and ease. Do you really want to put up that barrier of, I don't like this, I don't want this? You can put it up. That's fine. We're doing it all the time. We're always putting up those barriers. But we should know what we're doing. We should know that that's the kind of resistance we're having. It's okay. Have resistance, but know you're having that resistance. You know, look at what you're doing. Look at how you're pushing back on what is. You're not going to get them to change. They're going to open the doors. I once asked about it. Do we have to open the doors? Then they said, I can talk to Tenshin Roshi about it. Oh, no, no, don't do that. Don't talk to Tenshin Roshi about it. Just open the doors. I'll be fine. So the other practice of compassion is the practice of morality. So we have moral precepts in Buddhism: not killing, not stealing, not misusing sexuality, not speaking falsehoods, not taking intoxicants. So you think those are all like guidance for how to be in the social sphere, but they're also guidance for how to be internally, like not killing your thoughts, not killing not rejecting what comes up, not stealing, not trying to get some other zazen than the zazen you have. You have a zazen, it's been given to you. That's your zazen. You want some other zazen, you're trying to steal some other zazen from someone. Not misusing sexuality. You're going to spend your time in the cushion fantasizing about sex? It can happen. It can happen. So you can bring these moral precepts into your zazen, and turn them in sitting meditation. Three other paramitas are: be enthusiastic, be calm, or the idea of calm, and of course the idea of wisdom. So I want to skip on to wisdom. There's a phrase that when I was writing this talk, I was thinking about this talk. I was trying to think, where does this phrase come from? I want to find it. And then I thought really hard, and I remembered it, where it was from. It's another phrase from Master Dogen, and it's from his text called Only a Buddha and a Buddha. And it says, being unstained, and unstained or undefiled is also, you could also say, being unbiased. Being unbiased, because wisdom in Buddhism is about being unbiased, really. It's not about purity as much as it is. It is somewhat about purity, like unstained, okay? It's a little bit about purity. But it's mainly about being unbiased, not being one-sided, not coming down hard on the side of delusion, not coming down, hard on the side of enlightenment, not being biased one way or the other, but sitting in the center of reality, which is shaped by both delusion and enlightenment. Reality is shaped by delusion and enlightenment, and we, in our practice, sit in the center of that shape. Anyway, the quote is, being unbiased. Being unbiased is like meeting a person and not considering what he looks like. Also, it is like not wishing for more color or brightness when viewing flowers or the moon. Not wishing for more color or brightness. So, when viewing flowers or the moon, so you just, you know, in this practice, you just meet yourself where you are. You just meet yourself as nothing. Nothing is a distraction. Nothing is something in your zazen that you can't use. You can use everything in your zazen, no matter what it is, but only if you see it for what it is and let it go. See it for what it is and let it go. If you attach to it, if you react to it, if you spin around it, then you're not using it right. Just see what comes up, whatever it is. Nothing you can't use. Don't wish it to be any other way. Don't wish your stupid, evil karma to be any other way. It is as it is. You see it, you let it go. You see it, you let it go. It's hard because what you see, especially in long practice, as I said, is extremely disturbing. It's extremely disturbing to see your karma. If you see it clearly, and you will, it's disturbing, and it's a challenge to let it go. But that is what your practice is, to whatever it is. Don't wish for it to be. And then on the positive side too, if you see some, you know, if you see some calm, if you see some ease, if you see something that looks, maybe that's enlightenment. Maybe that's enlightenment. Maybe what I'm experiencing, maybe that's it. Maybe that's what I've always been looking for. Maybe that's what I've always longed for. Maybe this is it. And then you want it to be more like it is, more like that. And you want to have the next moment be like that, and the next, and the next, and the whole rest of your life be like that, you know, then it's the wishing for more color and brightness. So you just see things as they are and let them go over and over and over again, and you sit in the middle of both your ancient twisted karma and a vision, a beautiful, gorgeous vision of ease and joy and peace. and happiness and good social relations and positive feeling, and you sit in the middle of the nut of that, and you can't have really either one exactly. You just keep sitting in the middle of those two poles, and our life kind of goes back and forth. So the original quote that started this off was that Zazen is simply the Dharma gate of joy and ease. So I actually like to visualize, and I think it's okay in your practice to actually visualize that there's this gate, and it's okay, I think, in your practice to imagine that your thought of enlightenment, your bodhicitta, your thought of enlightenment is tending and headed in the direction of that Dharma gate of joy and ease. I think it's okay to imagine that this is your intention in practice. This is where you want to go. You want to head in that direction. And it's also important to remember that it's not it's not all on you to go toward that gate, that there is something on the other side of that gate that's coming to meet you, that the awakening of all the Buddhas, joy and ease in Zazen, is coming to meet you from the other side of that gate. And to have some confidence that that is true is what we call faith and trust. Trust in this process that is not completely dependent on what you think you're doing in sitting meditation. It's not completely dependent on that. There is something that's coming to meet you. And, you know, religious Zen people call that Buddha, but you can call that awakening. You can just call that awakening. That awakening is coming to meet you as you come toward the gate of joy and ease. When you meet there at that gate, that's the place where traps and snares, they can't reach it. They can't reach that place. And to know that there is a place where you are met, and that traps and snares don't reach, is it's nirvana. That's nirvana. Yeah.
What's awakening?
Oh, what is awakening? Like,
push.
Oh, okay.
When you should breathe.
What is a?
What is awakening? It's a, that's the question. First thing that comes to my mind is that's a question I can't answer. As I say, it's something that is not dependent on your effort. It's associated with, I don't know what it is, but I can tell you what it's associated with. And what it's associated with is your releasing, your making a great effort, and then your complete releasing of that effort. It's associated with that. Awakening is associated with that. It's a vital force that can, of course, be seen, touched, heard, tasted, smelled. But it can be realized. That's the teaching, that it can be realized. And it's associated with your great effort in Zazen and your complete letting go of that effort.
While you were talking a little bit about not rejecting greed, hate, and delusion as it comes up in your practice, but be aware of it, great awareness. I've been experiencing in taking my practice off the cushion into my everyday life. I kind of have a sense of, you know, being outside of myself, watching myself, observing myself, when those thoughts come up, to be aware of it, as you say. And I mentioned this to Mio recently, and he says, "Oh, well, you don't want to have that. Just get rid of that. Let that dissolve. Let that go away." And so, as I find all the time, there's tons of conflicts and between the teachings that I think I'm hearing. Can you speak to that issue? Do you understand what I'm asking?
I think so.
Okay. If you could speak to that a little bit.
I mean, you're seeing things in your daily life that you're noticing that potentially you weren't noticing before. For instance, some, say, biased thought related to something. Like, I see such and such a person looking such and such a way, and instead of meeting a person and not considering what they look like, you consider what they look like and you see some bias.
Yes.
For instance. Right? And you're noticing that.
Yes.
And you're telling me that Mio said, forget that?
I may not have expressed the thought to him in the same way I'm expressing it to you. I think what I expressed to him is, I feel like I'm kind of outside of myself, watching myself all the time. And he says, oh, you don't want that.
Ah, I see. I agree.
So what's the difference between the way I expressed it the first time to you?
Be inside yourself, watching yourself. Be inside. Inside, not outside. Inside Larry, watching Larry. That, you know, if you feel like a dissociation somehow, or, but there is, you know, there is a quality of mindfulness that is kind of a supervising quality. That's not outside of yourself. I mean, that's inside of yourself. So I think it's maybe how you just want to understand it is that there's this attentiveness and this mindfulness that's kind of growing in you, and you're seeing certain ways of thinking or perception that are habitual, and you're noticing those. And there is a kind of, I don't know, editing process that's going on in this, in mindfulness, I believe. There's kind of an you see some biased way that you're thinking about things, and you notice that, and you notice that you also notice I have an intention to try to not react in that way, or you may never resolve the biases. I mean, I don't know if we ever really resolve the biases that we have, but what we can resolve is how we act in response to those biases. So we see biases, you know, all the time, and to me, what the gift of practice is that, you know, we choose to act differently in response to that. We choose to consider other viewpoints, for instance. You know, to see things more clearly as they are. So it's having more choice. That process of having more choice. To me, this is not outside. This is inside. This is Larry working with Larry in the field of practice.
Thank you. I think I led him astray with the word outside, and I think probably that was not an accurate description of what the process is that has been happening.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I mean, if that isn't happening in your practice, you know, you're not. I don't know. I mean, I think that's the vital activity of practice. I mean, one of the great things, one of the gifts that has been for many years now, but came, you know, when I realized that I could think something without saying it in certain situations. When I realized that I actually had the power to think something and not say it, I started to feel like powerful. I did. I started to feel powerful. I started to feel self-possessed, you know, in possession of myself in a very positive way. So those kinds of things, I mean, that's your practice working in daily life. Wrong.
I like your
not being able to get beyond biases and judgment.
Mm-hmm.
That you can all hear from me.
Yes, we have recording too.
Oh. My prison practice has been great for that, in terms of just reminding me that I don't have to get beyond my biases and my judgments. I just got to learn to hold them a little more loosely, a little more flexibly, sometimes with self-humor.
Mm-hmm.
But that biases and judgment just in and of themselves aren't necessarily bad things. But how you work with them, you know, can be. But I like being reminded that otherwise it feels like I would be aspiring to get to a place where it seems like it's impossible as long as you're a human being.
Yeah, or as, you know, as long as you... I mean, I think it's probably possible for human beings of advanced awakening to get to go beyond biases and judgments, but I don't know anybody, I mean personally, that I think I could say that about, including my teachers. I see plenty of biases and judgments in them, you know, not severe ones, but I see them, you know. So I think it's a little lofty, yeah, to think that we go completely beyond, but to be absolutely aware and then have a bunch of choices about how we respond in the face of that, that's tremendously healing. Healing is the word I said, yeah. Tony?
When you mentioned life as the mixture of delusions and enlightenment, is that the same as what Dogen meant by life as being a discourse of a dream within a dream? Like, is it like
mm.
Because I've been trying to wrap my head around that and not really being able to stand like how. What I see before me is not really as it is, because I obviously, because I get in the way of it too, because of biasness, right? Because I have fallen subconscious judgments and stuff that alter what, how maybe I view something or a situation. But is that, yeah, so is that delusion and enlightenment mixture, is that what? Is that what that's meant as?
Well, I don't know if I can really answer your question, but I do know that these, I mean, if we're really lucky, these two forces are active in us. You know, the force of delusion is active in everybody, regardless whether they practice or not. I'm pretty convinced of that. The force of awakening, being present in anybody, it's hard to see that that's true. It's pretty easy to see that you know the force of delusion is and karma is working through all beings. The teaching is it the power of awakening is working through all beings as well. But it's hard to see that. And it's hard to and it's not an issue of like some kind of balance or anything like that, you know. It has something to do with awareness of both delusion and awakening. You know, it really has more to do with awareness than anything else. Like, how awake are we to delusion? You know, that's what, I mean, Dogen says, you know, people who are Buddhas are people who are awake to delusion. Sentient beings are people who are greatly deluded about enlightenment. He says that, you know, sentient beings are greatly deluded about enlightenment. Buddhas are greatly awakened about delusion. So, you know, he says that's in Genjo Koan. So I've always thought this is really, you know, my understanding is that awakening really has to do with our complete dedication to seeing delusion clearly, seeing our biases clearly. So I don't know if that answers your question, but that's all I know.
That really helped, yeah.
How do you bring Zazen into your, like, your everyday life, work life, social settings? Does that translate over to those things, or is it more of a practice that remains a practice?
Well, we've just been talking about how it goes into your daily life, like with what Larry was bringing up, because and with what Tony was bringing up, because this frightening and humbling and view of your delusion that you get on close inspection and on repeated incessant periods of practice, formal practice, like I was just doing. You know, I just finished a 5-day sesshin where we sit 10 periods a day, and we do that for 5 days, and then sometimes you sit at night too after zazen. So you know, this incessant going back to the cushion to see what's coming up, to confront what's coming up, to in with your awareness, and this builds over time. I would say this builds some mindfulness power, I would say. And so mindfulness, I don't think so much about mindfulness on the cushion, but off the cushion, I think about it a lot, because I think that that's where the power of your ability to attend to your stuff, your karma, your prejudices, your biases, your judgments, the ability to be really aware of those. Then it leaks over. It leaks over into your regular everyday life, and in a very helpful way. And it, you know, creates power. For instance, not say what you think. To be ashamed of what you think. Shame is a positive emotion in Buddhism, because it's indicative of seeing in ourselves thoughts and feelings that we know aren't socially, they don't lead to a great awakening. You know, that they aren't thoughts and feelings that are gonna enhance awakening in this world. You know, because the point of this practice is the overall point. The big message is to save all beings. That's the Bodhisattva vow. That's the course that we're meant to be on as Zen practitioners or Zen devotees, is to save all beings. All beings are saved through the power of awakening, whatever awakening is. But it has a power in this world, and we can aid it. We can enhance it. We can foster it. We can nurture it in this world, or we can not. We can break precepts. We can lie, steal, hate, be greedy. We have those choices. So we have two choices in front of us, or we have lots of choices in front of us. But I think my answer here has gone completely off the rails. But in any case, in daily life, I mean, you could ask yourself, is what I'm doing in the service of being helpful? Is this helpful? Is what I'm doing being helpful? I mean, there's a simple way to put it. Is it helpful, what I'm doing? Is it blameless? Is it for the greater good? Would it benefit most beings, at least? You can ask yourself that, and then it has, and I think practice is not, it doesn't stay on the cushion, because we tend to start thinking like that if we have the kind of body mind that's willing to do this practice, then we probably have the kind of body mind that is also interested in helping and also interested in the welfare of others. And being interested in the welfare of others is that's what we call big mind. That's what we call big mind, or magnanimous mind. And we enhance our capacity in that direction, I believe, by doing this practice on the cushion. And then somehow we feel more strength, more commitment to take that out into the world and to manifest it and to display it and give it to others and to really see others and care for their welfare and wish for all good things to come for people to get what they want, what they really need, which is awakening. Okay, well, I think that's probably enough, and we've gone over